Mediocrity Podcast. Talks about that nerdy stuff. Movies, comics, and video games. It's all good and there ain't no fluff. Brian Kluger is hosting the show. Jeremy Meggert's got jokes. Jonathan Atterbury sounds really handsome, and we all sure love you folks.
Oh, hello, ladies and gentlemen. It is the Mediocrity Podcast. So happy to be here. I'm Brian Kluger with Boomstick Comics, and you are listening to the Mediocrity Podcast, where the show is just okay. Find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Just type in Mediocrity, or type in Multimedia Men, or type in Boomstick Comics. You will find it, and you will listen, because you will laugh and cry and throw up. Wayne's World, hallelujah. I am joined by the effervescent Jonathan Atterbury and Jeremy Meggert. How you doing, you duo of dynamic dudes with beards?
That was a mouthful, man.
Yeah.
Great, man. I like being called effervescent. It doesn't happen that often. It doesn't happen nearly as often as it should.
It pretty much only happens on the show.
Well, good. I'm glad y'all are doing very well.
How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Doing well. There's been lots of work, lots of cool stuff coming out, lots of fun things going on. But yeah, I can't complain. I did watch you. You mentioned a movie. You watched a movie called Wind River on Netflix, right?
Correct.
Yeah, because I think that came out in theaters, or at least a little bit, and that's with Scarlet Witch and
Hawkeye
from Avengers, otherwise known as Elizabeth Olsen and Jeremy Renner. And you said that it made you squirm, like you got real uncomfortable with some rapiness.
Yeah, there was just that one scene that I'm sure everyone finds hard to watch in that movie. But outside of that, I mean, even I understand that it was an important scene to have in there. It was very dramatic, and it added a lot to the movie. So I'm not complaining that it shouldn't have been in there or anything. But it was just a really fucking great movie, and it was just that one scene that made it a little hard to watch in that part.
Oh, well, good. Have you seen it yet, Jeremy?
I have not.
I have not either. I didn't get a chance to see it.
Oh, man.
I played it.
You guys got to watch it. It's on Netflix right now. So, you know, it's not one of those movies that you'd want to watch with your parents or something like that. But outside
Why
of that.
Not?
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't want to watch it with my parents. I'll put it that way.
Why? What's the reasoning?
Well, all right. So mainly because my parents, they do not like stressful movies. If a movie is anything more than just like a flat, you know, happiness, they're not down for it.
So you never try to bring them over that line and watch it with them and just like watch the awkwardness run over everyone?
No, they just, my mom would last like 10 minutes in that movie and just be like, I'm done. I'm going to go watch a Victorian mystery.
Jeremy, what about you? Are your parents the same way?
I don't know what on my mom. My dad will watch most things, I think. I don't know about my mom.
All right. Yeah, my parents are, I think they're more in line with Atterbury's parents, I would imagine. They didn't used to be. My parents are fairly much responsible for getting me into movies, all kinds of fucking movies, like horror and all sorts of shit. But as they gotten older, they don't like what they used to like. They like really happy, like The Greatest Showman type shit. So
yeah, the same thing. I mean, my dad, he was the one that introduced me to The Exorcist. I mean, he used to enjoy the whole gambit, but now it's pretty much him and my mom just want to watch something calm. We just want to watch something nice.
What is it with
There's
that?
Enough suffering in the world. I want to watch nice things.
Yeah, what is it with I don't get it. I don't know what the deal is with
I don't
that.
Know. Maybe I'll feel the same way when I'm old. I don't know. I think maybe at a certain point you just get burnt out and you just want to fucking chill.
Well, I don't know, but I'm going to watch that. In addition to this movie, Wind River, there is a new horror movie on Netflix called Veronica.
That is on my list of movies to watch ASAP.
So it is directed by the guy, the Spanish director, who gave us Rec, R-E-C, which was turned into Quarantine years later. That was the English version. But he gave us Rec, which was a scary-ass kind of found footage zombie film.
More like vampire film.
Vampire, yeah, zombie, whatever. It's kind of, you know, they get infected and they're monsters. So with the Rec series, they've made several, but now he has a new movie called Veronica, and it is basically The Exorcist with teenage girls. I watched it, and I have to say that this director is very capable of making a good, good movie. However, the movie is such a slow burn with no payoff, and when it does pay off, it's something you've seen in dozens of other films. So it's, yeah, this face Atterbury's making right now is not a happy face.
I just smelled some really unpleasant cheese face.
Yes. and I watched it, and like there's some good moments, but it's just, okay, we've seen this. Oh, this is very slow, and
that's disappointing, man. There's been a lot of, I guess that movie's been built up a lot. I was reading on the internet, some people are saying, scariest movie ever made, no, yada, yada, yada.
Not at all.
People always say that every year about some movie, and I never really believe it. But it's enough to get me interested, at least.
Yeah, so I think the movie this year that might bank on its buck is a movie called Hereditary.
Yes.
We've seen trailers for that. And if you haven't seen the movie or trailer to Hereditary, you should look it up and watch the trailer because it looks damn good. I have not seen it yet. I really hope to soon. But Veronica, I got to say, it's on Netflix. I watched it and I'm a huge horror fan. I was less than thrilled. Like, I don't know, because I like this director. I liked Rec. And as you watch it, you will love. Like, it looks great. The performances are good. It's just
I'm going to watch it this weekend. So next week I'll be able to chime in with my opinion of the film.
Okay, good. Good.
But in the meantime, over this weekend, you guys really need to check out Wind River, because that one like completely flew under the radar for me. I hadn't heard anything about it until it popped up on Netflix. And I was like, oh, you know, we'll just watch it and see if we like it, whatever. It looks good. And I was super surprised, man. It had a great score. It had a really fun, or had a really good feel to it. It was, you know, heartfelt, touching, exciting, all of that stuff.
Sweet.
And it's just the whole movie takes place in like frozen Wyoming Indian reservation. So it's a really cool setting that you don't often see in movies, you know?
So yeah, when you think of a movie titled Wind River, you might think of like flowers and butterflies and romance. It's not that.
It's not that. It's a crime mystery about two people solving the murder of a young girl. And it's a fucking heavy movie, but it is really good and worth watching.
Cool. Jeremy, are you going to watch either Veronica or Wind River?
I'll probably check out Wind River at some point when I get a chance.
All right. You're out on Veronica?
I'm indifferent.
They don't do the horror films usually.
I just don't care.
All right. All right, I've got a little bit of news that is going to excite Jonathan Atterbury that came out today. So, Jonathan, you're a fan of Impractical Jokers, right?
Huge fan.
Okay, so news that came out today. As you know, True TVs, which is the network that shows Impractical Jokers, it's the longest running series they have. And now it has ordered a 26-episode, 8th season, along with a partnership with Funny or Die that will produce a feature-length film of Impractical Jokers.
So like Jackass the movie, but with Impractical Jokers?
Yes.
That's awesome. Count me in.
So what do you think about this? Do you think like – so usually seasons are like 10 or 13 episodes. Maybe I'm just – I mean, I remember seasons being like 22, 24 episodes long, but I haven't watched primetime TV in so long that I'm used to these 10, 13 episode story arcs on like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime. But 26 episodes for a season, this show must be so good. Like, 'cause I've seen it.
I've
just.
I, so,
Here's the only problem is you've only seen the first season, which is not a good season. If you honestly, if you've watched like the entire season, it really gets better. They kind of get a better handle on like how to run the show, make it snappier and funnier in later seasons. So it's definitely worth checking out. But the first season is not a good one to judge it by.
Okay. Jeremy, anything to add to this?
Does one apply the term story arc to a show like Impractical Jokers? I don't know.
Story arc?
No, Brian did. He goes, I'm so used to these shows with these like 13-episode story arcs, I just don't know if I can handle 26 episodes anymore.
Yeah, there's no story arc.
I don't think there's a story arc there for you
that's
to worry
like saying
about, the guy.
There's too many story. There's too big of a story arc in Jeopardy.
Yeah. There was though, wasn't
I'm
there?
Really,
there was
I'm like... really in it for the subplot and the side stories. Thank you.
I think that this actually, like, all the seasons for this show are pretty damn long because they're just like, honestly, it's like 20 minutes of footage once you take out the commercials, and they air weekly, and it's just a little thing that they do, and half the time it's like, you know, they'll have compilation shows or stuff like that, so it's probably not that much content to create for them.
So with all this, I mean, they've been on for... You know, now it says 7 seasons. They're about to be on for 8 seasons. I'm trying to figure out, like, what impractical jokes or practical jokes they can pull that haven't been done already or, like, original.
Well, so here's the first thing that my mind goes to when I hear that they're doing a movie. Movie means bigger budget.
Right.
So all the pranks that they've pulled are done real low budget for the most part. So I just imagine like with Jackass, that all the things that they thought about that they're like, nah, that's impractical or, you know, no pun intended. It's too expensive. It'd be too hard to do, require too much coordination, stuff like that. Now they can do those things. So I imagine they've got a long list of stuff that just was too grandiose to pull off in the show.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm excited. I guess I have to give this a shot. And if the movie, I mean, if anything proves Jackass movies, they maybe cost like a few million dollars, but they end up making like over 60 or 100 or something like that. They make
tons
of money.
And those movies were at least for me, I loved those movies.
Oh, they're so funny. They're some of the funniest movies ever. Like, I still watch them, and they're still really...
I laugh out loud all the time I watch those movies. And I think that these guys have all the same chops to be able to pull off something just as good as that.
But Impractical Jokers is not, like as risque or vulgar.
Well, it's different. I mean, because Jackass is doing, like, insane physical stuff a lot of the time, where they're putting themselves in harm's way. Excuse me, that's my phone ringing. But, it's just a very different type of show. They're really just making fun of each other, which is what makes it so much
fun. You need to answer that?
No. Yeah. You don't need
you
to answer
get it
that.
If you want.
We can answer it on the show. Answer.
Great yeah. Entertainment.
It is. Answer and see why they're calling during our podcast. He's not doing it. Dang it. Well, I'm excited for one about this big deal with Impractical Jokers. And the fact that Funny or Die is behind it, that's a pretty big deal too as far as web and movie stuff. So they might even get a few fairly big celebrities, comedians to get in on this.
They've had a few celebrities work with them on their show already. Joey Fatone is friends with one of the guys with all those guys.
Celebrities.
Hey, Joey Fatone is a celebrity. I didn't say he's an A-lister, but he's a celebrity. And let's see. I'm trying to think who else. Rosie O'Donnell has been on the show also.
Rosie.
So it's there.
All right.
And I don't think Brian's seen it yet, but I recently hired Jeremy to do a sketch of one of the characters from Impractical Jokers, and he did a great job.
I think I did that. I commissioned Jeremy too, but I haven't decided on what I wanted to draw yet.
I asked him to do a sketch of Joe Gatto's character, Captain Fatbelly, and he did a great job. It's fantastic.
Awesome. All right. Let's move on from this. We have to bring up Black Panther again. because it is breaking box office records still. Black Panther, as of today, is currently the number 9 film domestically in the box office with over $506 million, meaning it's in the top 10 biggest movies of all time money-wise. And I would imagine that's going to grow even more. It hasn't even hit China yet. So
does that make it the best-selling movie from the Marvel movies? Or I'm not really sure how it compares to Avengers or the Iron Man movies or stuff like that.
All right, I'm looking right now at Box Office Mojo. And as far as domestic goes, the top 10 movies are Beauty and the Beast from this past year, Black Panther, Rogue One, Dark Knight.
Hold on, that's number 10, right? From bottom to top?
Yeah. Beauty and the Beast from this year is 10, Black Panther's 9, Rogue One is 8, Dark Knight 7, Star Wars Last Jedi is 6, Marvel's The Avenger is number 5 with $623 million. Black Panther.
The first Avengers film?
Yep.
Gotcha.
So this has over $100 million to go before, domestically at least, to get over Marvel's Avengers, which I don't see doing.
Right.
And then Jurassic World, Titanic, Avatar, and The Force Awakens. And that's just domestically. When you talk about worldwide, Black Panther is still in number 35. But again, it hasn't hit all markets all over the world yet.
That's awesome. It deserves that success, man. It's a great film.
No, yeah. I totally agree. I think that's awesome. But yeah, we wanted to update you. That is currently the number 9 movie, highest making money making movie of all time. So that's cool. Let's move on to a little unfortunate news. Not unfortunate per se, but we're going to discuss it. So. Yesterday, John Williams, the amazing composer behind some of the biggest movies ever, such as Star Wars, Superman, Jurassic Park, Harry Potter, Schindler's List, anything.
Indiana Jones.
Said yesterday in a radio interview that after the upcoming Star Wars movie, which will be Episode 9, he will stop making music for Star Wars. And that's all he said. He's 86 years old, so he said he's going to stop making music for Star Wars. My question to you is, do you think he's going to retire completely, or is he still going to make music for other films? And should he stop?
Should he stop? God, I hope not.
Yeah, I mean, I don't give a fuck if he should stop. I mean, I think if he wants to make music, he should make music. If he doesn't want to, then he shouldn't.
Lord knows he's got the chops for it still. I mean, yeah. Last Jedi and The Force Awakens scores were great, killer scores.
Yeah.
And so he's still got the chops for it, but I imagine it's just a lot of work. I mean, when you're pushing 90, that's a lot of fucking work to do. And he's got the money, so I'm sure at this point he's just kind of like, yeah, I think I'm going to chill.
But it's weird to see, because I'm trying to think of all the scores he's done. I'm actually going to look them up right now on IMDb. But as far – he just specifically – his wording was, I'm just not going to do Star Wars after this. But
I assume that he's just leaving himself room to do stuff if he chooses to do it, I think.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean he's got plans, but it's him, you know, he's just saying, look, I'm done with this stuff. Maybe at some point I might do something else, but we'll see.
Nine of these movies, he's probably like, yeah, I'm good.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm out of themes for characters in the Star Wars movies.
So he has So let's say since Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull in 2008. He was the composer of Adventures of Tintin, War Horse, Lincoln, The Book Thief, Star Wars Force Awakens, The BFG, and The Last Jedi. Also, the recent Oscar-nominated film The Post, these are basically all Spielberg. Now, it looks like he has 3 movies coming out. One's called The Kidnapping of Eduardo Mortara, which is a Steven Spielberg film. Then he has Star Wars Episode 9, and then he has announced that he will be doing the music for Indiana Jones in 2020. So I guess he's literally just working with Spielberg at this point, is what it seems like. And I guess, I don't know. What do you guys think?
About which part?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'm just...
Do we think that he's mostly working with Spielberg at this point? Yes. Yes, yeah, I do. Yes,
we agree with your statement.
Well, I mean, like, is there a scenario where, like, Wes Anderson or M. Night Shyamalan are like, let's get John Williams, and he just says no. But when Spielberg calls, he's like, yes.
I'm sure that that does happen. First of all, I'm sure that it's very few people that can afford John Williams. And secondly, I bet it's a matter of him just like, I don't want to do something unless it fits my specific taste if it's people that I like working with.
I agree with John on that, because it's not like Blumhouse is going to, you know, make an M. Night Shyamalan movie and then give him John Williams soundtrack money. But, you know, like the flip side of that is with working with Spielberg, he probably really doesn't have anybody fucking with him ever. He probably pretty much gets to do whatever he wants with minimal interference because it's a Steven Spielberg movie.
Okay. And I guess they've just known each other since Jaws, basically, I guess. They've had a long working relationship. And yeah, just, since they're doing so many more Star Wars films, it's just unfortunate that he's like, I mean, I guess we've had like Rogue One and other Star Wars movies recently without John Williams at the helm, although these...
It just doesn't feel right, though.
Well, the good
It's different, but on top of that, though, I mean, even though he's not going to do any more, all of his themes are still going to be in there. You know? You'll get some variations of them, but, you know, all of his music will still be present.
True. True, true, true.
And it's not like he's not getting paid for the use of those themes.
It'll just be performed by all Steve Vai in the next Star Wars movie.
Dude.
Well, Yngwie Malmsteen's doing the next Star Wars movie soundtrack.
Oh, God, that's the worst. That got a reaction.
Jeremy has to go throw up.
Yeah, a little bit. Died a little inside on that one. I mean, like, when you listen, like, when you watch the Solo story, I mean, it's, you know, it's the Star Wars theme, but, it's the Star Wars theme played through a fucking Blade Runner filter.
Wow.
You know?
Well... We'll see. I don't know. It's, it was just upsetting, I guess, when he's like, I'm stepping away from Star Wars, and so much about Star Wars is John Williams. So, and again, he's 86 years old. And
his theme songs in those movies are going to outlast any character or actor, that's for sure.
Yes, very much. Very much. And, you know, you think about all of his stuff, like, so many songs that you hum or from movies are him, basically, so...
Dude, I mean, when you think about pretty much any movie soundtrack that stands out as being a great soundtrack, there's a 90% chance that it's a John Williams piece of music.
Correct. Correct, correct, correct. It's so good. I like it a lot. All right. Well, we like you, John Williams, and I guess we will see you with Indiana Jones, you know, if that still gets made. We'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see. All right.
I'm assuming as long as none of those old guys die between now and then, it'll happen.
What? Spielberg, Harrison Ford, and John Williams?
Pretty much.
I guess I'm really curious if Lucas is going to be part of it, because Lucas and Spielberg were always like the team on.
I assume he'll be a consultant, but I think that's probably all he'll be doing.
Let's hope so.
Because, I mean, Disney's got it. You know, they've got it. So. Yeah,
true. That's true.
I don't see them including him that much any more than they did with the other Star Wars movies that they've made since.
True.
You know, Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about something.
We got to talk about the Oscars.
Oh,
we got to talk about. It did happen. We talked about our predictions, and it did happen.
I didn't watch the Oscars.
I didn't either. But we have to talk about who won.
Okay. Okay. We'll talk about.
I watched them.
So Jeremy, did you like it?
Not really. I mean, I'm not really into award shows. Josie has fun and watches them, so I just kind of drew while they were on, and I was curious to see if Logan was going to win. But this is just something that that to me is an example of how they do these award shows. You know, they get to the best adapted screenplay, right? And in every little cut of a movie they play, they play the fucking dialogue, right, that the actors are talking. But then they get to the best screenplay, and you're like, oh, cool, I'm actually going to get to hear some Logan in the Oscar ceremony. And they play fucking music over all of the movies that they're giving an award to the best screenplay for adapted screenplay. So in all of those movies in that cast, music over them. And I'm like, well, why the fuck would you do that?
That is so weird.
But to their credit, it was really cool when they mentioned Logan. They because it's an adapted screenplay. They named the comic creators of the character. They named Lin Wein and John Romita Sr. and actually, you know, said their names out loud at an Oscar ceremony, which was pretty cool.
That is cool.
So
that is very cool. So, you know, speaking of adapted screenplay, of course, Logan didn't win, but Call Me By Your Name did. An adapted screenplay, of course, is a movie based on a book. This is or based on something. Call Me By Your Name. I didn't read the book, but I could tell you the movie. I don't even know why. Logan definitely should have won that. I'm definitely happy for Jordan Peele for original screenplay for Get Out, which was awesome. Which is probably one of the only awards that it won that night, was Get Out. But the big award was for
Shape Picture, of Water. Yep. Shape of Water.
Yes, and Guillermo del Toro won Best Director, which, I mean, knowing I've met him, I've talked with him, and you're happy because he's kind of like one of us nerds and geeks that loves all sci-fi and horror type stuff, so it was cool to see that win. And I'm happy Shape
of Water. Have you guys seen that movie yet? I haven't seen it.
Shape of Water? No. Oh, yeah, I've definitely seen Shape of Water.
I'm looking forward to watching that when it comes out.
I don't think it deserved Best Picture out of what was nominated, but I'm happy for it. Definitely happy.
I am very happy that Gary Oldman finally got some Oscar recognition.
And, you know, you say that. I think this year was so – I mean, yes, Gary Oldman deserved it. Not for Darkest Hour, though. I mean, this was a pity Oscar.
I don't think it's a pity. I think it's more of a about fucking time Oscar. You know, I mean, that dude has deserved an Oscar for a long time.
Has he not won one?
No.
No. It was his first Oscar win for anything, and which is mind-blowing considering the incredible stuff that he's done.
Well, there that is. It's just
You said that.
It's ridiculous. It's the same thing that how Leo DiCaprio won the Oscar for The Revenant and not Wolf of Wall Street or anything else. It's the same thing. They just gave it to him.
That fucking guy deserved it for The Revenant, man. I'm sorry. That was a great acting job.
Don't know. I would like to say that Roger Deakins won for cinematography, which he's never won. And Roger Deakins is one of the coolest cinematographers ever. He won for Blade Runner 2049. And we have to talk about who won an Oscar who nobody thought would. It was for an animated short film. The animated short film called Dear Basketball. And you know who has an Oscar now? Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Bryant has an Oscar. Do you know who doesn't have an Oscar? Glenn Close doesn't have an Oscar. But Kobe Bryant does.
How are those two things related?
I don't know. Glenn Close has been in the movie business forever and played some amazing roles and doesn't have an Oscar. But Kobe Bryant steps in, gets an Oscar right away.
I don't see how those two things correlate.
No, it's just kind of a joke.
Okay.
Well, have you seen his movie?
You know what? I never saw I mean, I'm happy for him, of course.
So you're saying that you think it's a joke that he won, but you've never seen the thing that he won for, even though it could be an incredible piece of art.
No. So Kobe Bryant didn't draw it. He just produced it. He like gave.
I know he didn't draw it, but he created.
A beautiful piece of art. No, I'm saying
he didn't
like
draw the cartoon. He doesn't deserve it.
No, art I isn't never just said drawing, he didn't deserve man. It. And I'm not saying it's a joke. I'm just saying it's what I said was a joke.
For those of you listening to the podcast, rewind it about 30 seconds, and you'll hear the words coming out of Brian's mouth. It's just a joke.
No, from what I said, not from Kobe Bryant.
So what you said was a joke.
Yeah, like how like a really prominent actress who's been around for 40 years in amazing roles, been nominated many times, like 8 times, never won, and Kobe Bryant.
It's not about how many times you've done it. It's about if it's great or not. I mean, so Glenn Close was awesome in 101 Dalmatians. Don't get me wrong.
What?
But she was great as Cruella de Vil.
John is correct. She was very good.
She was good. No, I'm just saying.
I don't know if it was deserving of an Oscar, though. Shit.
No, I'm just, it's funny. It's like, it's Kobe Bryant has an Oscar. Now I'm waiting for him to get an Emmy, a Tony, and a Grammy. That's what I'm waiting for.
Well, if he wants one, he'll probably get one.
I guess. I'm sure Kobe Bryant has won an ESPY, so you can take that Emmy and change it to an ESPY, and that'd be his, like, E for the EGOT. So that would be awesome. But yeah, Kobe Bryant has an Oscar. Like I said, I didn't watch the Oscars, so I don't know whatever all happened that was fun, but I'm happy for Guillermo del Toro. I gotta say, when I first met him and I interviewed him was way back in, I think, early 2000. And this was before Hellboy 1 came out. And I asked him, I was like, oh, I know you're a huge comic book fan, and now you got to make your favorite comic book ever, Hellboy. What's that feel like? And his response was, I feel like a huge boner right now. And he, like, stood up straight with his hand tall. And, like, when I heard that he won, I really hope that he would be like that on his Oscar acceptance.
I feel like a huge boner.
But, no, he absolutely – it was so good. So funny. And I was like, because if you've ever seen him interviewed or like on some of his Blu-rays, he'll do tours of his house and like all of his collectors, toys and statues and stuff. He's just a big kid. And
my mind is just frozen on the fact that he said, I feel like a huge boner. Yeah. I can't stop thinking about anything but that. I think that that's a really great response to asking someone how they feel.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try to use that line at some point in my life.
But when you do, you have to do what he did. He stood up straight.
Stand up straight.
Hands down and like his head up.
Get fully erect with your whole body.
I thought it was perfect. We laughed and I think that was in Chicago at a Chicago Comic Con. He was just walking around, and I recognized him because this, again, was before Hellboy 1. So he wasn't, like, as popular as he was now.
Turns out that it wasn't Guillermo del Toro. It was just some guy that looked a little bit like him.
No, it was.
Brian's like, hey, you're a heavyset guy that looks vaguely Spanish. You must be Guillermo del Toro.
They all look alike.
Oh, God.
but yes, no, that's pretty good. Yes, Oscar. Anything else to add to the Oscars?
Nope. They did the In Memoriam, and they had Eddie Vedder sing Top of the World by Tom Petty. And he did a great job, except when they were doing the In Memoriam, they left out Adam West.
Did Adam West die in 2017?
He did.
They left out Adam West. I heard they left out Toby Hooper as well.
They left out, like, Adam West, Powers Booth, and a couple other people that definitely should have been in there. But I'm like, man, how do you leave out Adam West?
That's interesting. Well, shit. Yeah, every year it seems like they leave somebody out. And Toby Hooper is huge to the genre, and I heard that they left him out, which is crazy. For those of you who don't know, Toby Hooper is the guy who directed Texas Chainsaw Massacre, who pretty much most directors cite him as an influence.
Most horror directors.
Well, even any other directors. I mean, Spielberg loved him and had Toby Hooper do Poltergeist, amongst other things. But let's move on.
You mean he had Toby Hooper be there while he directed Poltergeist?
There is a huge controversy surrounding who directed Poltergeist. It is labeled directed by Toby Hooper with Steven Spielberg producing, but there's a lot of accounts that like both were on set and both were directing, or Spielberg would take over or Toby. Yeah.
The weird thing is that Toby Hooper made really nothing but awful movies except for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the first one, and the rest is unwatchable garbage. And the Poltergeist film is fantastic. And it feels like a Spielberg movie. It's a totally different level of quality than everything Tobe Hooper did ever. So I just don't buy it.
Okay. Let's talk about that. You have Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Tobe Hooper did Salem's Lot. That is a fantastic TV movie.
Oh, God, no. That is a horrible, horrible waste of film. Have you read the book? The book is great. The book is fantastic and scary, and the TV series movie is a travesty. It's unwatchable. It's such garbage. What was the last time you tried to watch it?
It's been a while.
How old were you?
It's been a while, more than 10 years.
It was like new the last time you tried to watch it. I literally tried to watch this movie again like 6 months ago, and I could not do it. I got like halfway into it, and it's long. It's like 4 hours long, something like that.
Well, it's a TV movie. They spread it over, of course.
I know, but I watched like half of it, and I just couldn't do it. It was really, really, really bad.
I don't know what you're talking about. But he also did
try it again.
The Fun House, which was fun. Poltergeist, awesome. Life Force, Invaders from Mars. Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, which has the iconic poster of Breakfast Club, but with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre family, which was a lot of fun.
So you just proved my point that everything he did was unwatchable garbage, except for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which just, I think, was a happy accident that it worked. And Poltergeist, I don't think he directed it. Because if you think about all those other movies and Poltergeist, they're on two totally different levels.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
But most people haven't even seen the movies you just listed besides Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Poltergeist. Why? Because they're crap.
You're wrong. And I think the last movie he directed was called Jinn, D-J-I-N-N. So I'm trying to remember if I've seen that. I can't remember, but he also directed Luke Skywalker, Mark Hamill in an anthology movie called Body Bags, which was put on by John Carpenter, but he directed the segment called I, which was, I think, one of the best ones in that, that anthology film with Mark Hamill back in 1993. But, yes, I like Tobe Hooper. What are you dogging on him for?
I'm just saying I'm not dogging on him. I'm saying that I don't think he directed Poltergeist.
Man, he directed Poltergeist. With some help. All right, let's move on. Let's move on from this. We have to bring this up. 20 years ago this week, The Big Lebowski debuted in theaters and set off a worldwide phenomena. As the dude and the dude abides and a whole philosophy on this film. Do you guys love Big Lebowski? What do you take away from it? And why do you love The Big Lebowski? Some 20 years later.
I'm going to let Jeremy go first because I have a lot to say about this.
Yes, I do love it. I haven't seen it in a long time. I think the last time I saw it was with John, and we were drinking White Russians. I don't remember where we were living at the time, but I think that's the last time I've seen it. But yeah, man, I always thought it was a really funny movie. I, you know, always dug the characters a bunch.
All right. I do too. I'm a huge fan of Lebowski. I have original artwork of Lebowski hanging up. I had a philosophy of, you know, fuck it, dude, let's go bowling, you know, just a very carefree or like kind of like attitude, you know, like, oh, it's all water under the bridge type of thing. I like that. And I like the fact that it's one of the wittiest and smartest films ever written because there's not a single joke in that movie. However, every line that is delivered is highly comedic and hilarious. It's so funny. It's just it's how it's presented. It's how it's delivered. It's how it's performed. You know, a line like a show dog has fucking papers is not a funny line, but holy shit, it's hilarious. Or is this your homework, Larry? Is a damn funny line. Or it's a, not a funny line, but it's damn funny when you watch it. I just think it's so perfect how the Coen brothers just completely had the script, and when you watch it, and like it's one of those few films that every time you watch it, it's just as good, if not better, every time you watch it. But since Atterbury has a lot to say about this, I can't wait to hear what he has to say. So, Jonathan, enlighten us, dude.
All right. So, first, I'm going to start by saying that the Big Lebowski is my favorite movie that it's not a Star Wars movie, basically.
So, Star Wars is in its own separate category, but number one is Big Lebowski.
Yeah. It has been for at least a few years now.
Phantom Menace, Big Lebowski.
That is at an accurate order there. Only because Phantom Menace is the lowest on the list of the Star Wars films. So, yeah, man, I absolutely love The Big Lebowski. That whole movie is perfect. Everything about it was done perfectly. And, you know, a lot of people in their life try to strive to be more Christ-like or something along those lines. I try to strive to be more dude-like.
And so you say that, but there are books, like actual books written, not comedy books, but actual religious and philosophical books written on like the idealism of the dude in his ways.
It's a beautiful outlook that the dude has on life. And
what
I think
that
we could all the outlook is like, hey man, fuck it.
That's my set. You know fuck I mean? It. Let's go bowling. Yes,
exactly. Not even like let's go bowling, but you know what? Fuck it. Like it's not my thing to worry about. And I don't know. And also just to be too many people I think in life get so caught up in what it is that they're doing and the job and the works and things like that that they're doing that are trying. They're so obsessed with what it is that they're achieving. And yet the dude is just happy to be. And that's what we all need more of. We just need to be happy to exist. The dude abides. But he's just happy to just live without worrying about the achievements. And that's a beautiful thing.
He is in the moment of whatever he is doing.
Some serious Zen shit going on there, man.
Yeah, that movie came out March 6th, 1998, which was yesterday. That is 20 years ago, and it's hard to believe that it's been 20 years ago.
just a beautiful film, and it's touching, too. That's the great thing about it, is it's so funny and ridiculous, but at the same time, it ends on such a – it's so poignant.
Yes, for sure. It's just so good. Just everything about it is damn good. And of course, the guy who won Best Cinematographer at the Oscars this year, Roger Deakins, was the guy who did the cinematography on Big Lebowski, as well as Fargo and Shawshank Redemption. You think of these movies and he's never won an Oscar. This was his first Oscar. Even O Brother, Where Art Thou? So Roger Deakins is a big Coen Brothers guy. And like even the soundtrack to that movie is amazing with Captain Beefheart, Bob Dylan, Elvis Costello. It's good. It's
the only thing I can't agree with the dude on is I do like the Eagles.
I fucking hate the Eagles, man. it's so good. It's one of those movies that if it's on, you watch the whole thing and you can quote it and easily. You know, this movie cost $15 million and it made $46 million, so it definitely made its money back, but not a box office blockbuster or hit by any means. But it just so much word of mouth from people, it just became like a cult favorite. And like it is like you can see like how pop culture-y and iconic Big like Lebowski is, and like not just him, but literally every character in the film. Like the Jesus is huge.
I also have to mention that I actually own the exact same sweater that the dude has.
You do?
His Pendleton wool sweater that he's got. I have a replica, an exact replica of that same sweater.
That's funny.
And it's comfy as shit.
Well, good. You know, everybody's always asked the Coens, you know, the Coen brothers, are they going to do a sequel? And they're not going to do one. However, there was there's a film that's been made. It was made last year by John Turturro, who played the Jesus, called Going Places. And it is a spinoff on Totoro's character from Big Lebowski, the Jesus. So it is that it. We don't know when it's coming out, but it follows a trio of sexually depraved misfits. One is Jesus Quintana. The other guy in that trio is Bobby Cannavale, who we all love as well. So I'm very excited to see this and see where it, if you know, if it's as good. But I'd like to see that a Jesus film. But Big Lebowski, 20 years old and still going strong. One more last piece of news before we get in our two awesome, fun topics. Something that struck out of me that I thought was kind of cool and I thought would be fun to talk about. South by Southwest is going on about to go on right now in Austin, which is a very, very, very big film festival and music festival in Austin. Netflix announced today, pretty much prior to this, this festival, it's acquired the rights to Daryl Hannah's, is a big time actress. You know, she was in the original Blade Runner and she was in Kill Bill. Her directorial feature length debut called Paradox, which is a whimsical musical tale starring Neil Young. Yes, that Neil Young. It's billed as a fantasy and loud poem and a free-spirited tale of music and love, where it follows the man in the black hat, Neil Young. So I just thought that was really cool, and I really want to see this now. I'm a fan of anything Neil Young, so I just... When he's, like, playing...
Say anything Neil Young, you mean all the awful shit that he's put out in the last 15 to 20... Actually, more like 30 years?
What? That is my Lil Jon impression. What?
I love Neil Young, but I love good Neil Young, and that ended a long time ago.
Oh, no. No, sir. Jeremy, are you in agreement on this?
I am in partial agreement with John, except in the fact that I don't really like... John doesn't like some Neil Young. I pretty much don't like any Neil Young. I'm not going to lie. The second you said loud poem, I wanted to vomit in my own mouth.
What you just described sounds awful.
Fucking terrible. Loud poem, wow. Get the fuck out of here.
Like, I think it's going to be an absolute train wreck and an unwatchable turn of a film.
Wow. Loud poem.
Just saying, it's just my knee-jerk reaction. From what you just described, it sounds just spectacularly shitty.
Sounds dumb.
All right, I'm going to read you the full sentence real quick. Billed as a fantasy, a loud poem, and a free-spirited tale of music and love, Paradox follows a band of outlaws hiding high up in the mountains. The man in the black hat, Neil Young, the particle kid, Micah Nelson, and jail time, Lucas Nelson, pass the hour searching for treasure while they wait for the full moon to lend its magic, bring the music, and make the spirits fly.
God.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't get. I mean, what?
My palms are sweating just from you describing that to me. It sounds so embarrassing that I feel bad for them.
Really?
Yeah, it sounds horrible.
Well, like, first, why does it sound terrible? And I don't get the whole hating Neil Young thing. I don't get it.
I don't hate Neil Young. I love Neil Young and so much of the music that he created. I really do. But I hate later Neil Young's music. It's lost all of what made it nice and enjoyable. And his voice was never good, but God, it's just gotten much worse.
I agree with that.
It's just gotten so much worse with age. And there's just nothing worth listening to. I mean, I've listened to every album that he's put out in the last 15 years. I really have. I've bought half of them and I listened to them. I was like, nope, go through every track, listen to it. I listened to it the entire way from front to back, and I'm always just like, all right, cool. That's going in the pile never to be listened to again.
Damn.
Awful. Ever since, like, Rust, it's just been nonstop crap.
Well, come March 23rd, you'll be able to watch it on Netflix.
Neil Young's voice has the same effect on me as Geddy Lee's.
Jesus. I had no idea on so much hate on Neil Young. Am I the only one that wants to see this and likes Neil Young here?
I love Neil. Once again, I love Neil Young's good music, which is like the first 20 years of his, you know, music making career.
Before you were born.
I love it.
You are correct. You are the only one that wants to see it.
Out of the three of us, you're the only one that wants to watch that movie.
You're going to row that boat all by yourself, big man.
I am. I'm going to watch that shit. And I'm excited for Daryl Hannah to see if she does well on back of the camera.
So. All right.
What day does this bit of humanity come out?
March 23rd on Netflix.
All right. I'm already looking forward to the show after that.
It's only in a couple weeks, man. We'll see. We'll see. I'm sure that it's going to premiere at South by on March 15th. So probably March 15th and March 16th, we'll see reviews, and I'm curious to see what people think of this. And it's Neil Young. Neil Young original music. They're actually dropping the soundtrack for it that day as well. So I'm excited.
I'm glad you're excited, man.
Okay. All right. Before we get to our two awesome topics, I've got to ask the question to Jeremy specifically. Why, oh, why, Jeremy, have you not gotten Call of Duty World War II yet, son?
We not covered this like repeatedly.
I just want it. I just want you to get Call of Duty. It's not a big request. We have so much fun playing it, John. Didn't we have so much fun playing it the other night?
We do. We have a little clan going on and everything.
I'm glad you guys are having fun.
I wanted to make it known that I didn't bring this up again. answering a question.
At the end of the day, it's all the same game over and over and over again. In 9 months, you're going to have Call of Duty World War II 2 is going to come out, and this disposable game, no one's going to give a shit about. It's like it's the Assassin's Creed of first-person shooters. That's what it is. And honestly, they're all the same game. That's why people like them, because the second you played one, you're playing the same game from 10 years ago. It's just reskinned, and like some new assets are built, so it looks like World War II.
Is this true, John?
Look it up. They have been using the same game engine forever.
So it's a very similar engine, no doubt about that. But to me, it's similar in the way that you want any good sequel to be to a video game. Like, if you play Knights of the Old Republic 1 versus Knights of the Old Republic 2, you want them to be similar, and you want just small improvements to be made. You want it to be like, okay, well, this is something that bothered me that they improved, and they fixed that. You don't want it to be like, all right, here's a totally different feeling game. So you want the similarity, but you want improvement. You know, it's like the opposite of what happened with Destiny, where we got Destiny 2, and they were like, all right, so all the good things about Destiny 1, we're going to change those, keep all the crappy things, and add in some new crappy things. So, I mean, you know, Destiny 2 was just a great example of what not to do with a sequel of a video game. And I think that this is just a really good game in a series. It's very much like the other ones, but it's been cleaned up, and there's a lot of things about it that I like that weren't necessarily present in the other games.
So, I love the game. It's a lot of fun. I miss playing.
I do love it, no doubt about it. I've been playing it every day.
I'm just I want Jeremy to take part in this so much.
I think now it's just definitely not going to happen. Well, even if it's just to spite you.
I mean, let's say Jeremy walks out to his mailbox in the next week or so, and he's opened up his mail, and then he sees a box, and then in that box is Call of Duty World War II. Does he not play it, or does he play it? I don't know.
I think he would play it if that was the case.
I would play it offline invisibly so you'd never know.
Oh, damn it.
I would join your party, play it offline invisibly, and tell you I was playing Battlefront.
Well, I haven't played Battlefront in so long. I do miss Battlefront, for sure. But I'm just having a good time playing Call of Duty. And every time Atterbury and I play on there, we're just like, fuck Jeremy. We got to get Jeremy on this. He would have a lot of fun in here.
The really amazing thing to me, and I'm just so proud of our little Kluger over here, is that he regularly comes in top three on that game. It's unlike any other game I've played with him, but he's really good with the shotgun in that game, and it's deadly.
Okay, let's break this down for a second. let's look at historically how Brian Kluger, Gumbercules, has ranked in every multiplayer game shooter since we have known him, right?
I know. It defies logic.
It's not always great. It's not always that bad, but it's not always great. And now what you're saying is that this game, he's like the savant. So now I got to wonder... How good is the game, really? I mean,
the game is great, and it's hard as balls. That's the thing that's crazy, is that this game is way fucking harder than Battlefront or Destiny and those other games. I would say it's a much harder shooter to get a grip on. But that's what the part is so weird about it, is that Kluger is actually really good. Now, I haven't seen what happens when he uses other classes, but when he uses the shotgun, it's artwork. He's surgical with that bitch.
It is. And so, like, y'all have never played Overwatch, and I'm really good at Overwatch as well. Not so much at Battlefront. I think I was fairly decent at Halo. Like, fairly decent. Fairly decent at Halo. I wasn't
I can agree with the words fairly decent. I can agree with that. Fairly,
but I'm really good at Overwatch, and I'm really... Surprisingly, I surprised myself at Call of Duty.
He regularly outranks me on Call of Duty, and that is just surprising and awesome.
And that doesn't make you stop to think that maybe that game is broken? No.
It's honestly, of all the shooters I've played recently, it's the least broken shooter. It's the one where I don't ever think to myself, that was bullshit. What just happened to me, like that kill or whatever that just happened, that's crap. I never think that in this game, which is why I like it. It just works.
I just want Jeremy to be a part of this amazing funness that we have here.
It's true. Kluger asks that every time we play. He's like, why isn't Jeremy playing this with us? So I don't think it's going to happen, man. It's not going to happen.
It's like playing Halo. It is so much fun. And we have like a pretty cool team now.
We do. We have a pretty good 5-person squad at the moment. And your brother is going to be joining us as well as a few other people. So, yeah. And the cool thing is that there are private matches. So you can do, you know, you can set it up so it's like just the clan playing against each other. And there's also the zombies mode, which is, you know, like Left 4 Dead or something like that. So it's a lot of different stuff you can do all in that one. It's pretty fun.
Jeremy, we miss you.
I know you do.
All right. Enough about Call of Duty. Let's get to our two big topics today. Today's two big topics. We are going to talk about Dexter, and we're going to talk about theme parks. Dexter, the TV show, first, because it was brought to my attention actually over a Call of Duty play of the game type thing. John said, like, hey, did you see the news? They're bringing back Dexter for a 9th season. I'm like, what? And so
we were playing Call of Duty, actually, and in between a match, I was looking on the internet, and I was like, oh, my gosh, they're doing the next season of Dexter, they're bringing it back. I sent it to Kluger, and he was like, I'm pretty sure that that's fake.
Yeah, 99%.
Basically, like 20 minutes later, he's like, I'm fairly certain that that's fake, and he crushed all of my hopes and dreams.
And that's true. It's not happening.
It's not happening, and I'm just really mad that there's people in the world that want to do that to me, that just want to build up my hopes like that and then just dash them. It's so cruel.
So, every April 1st, there's always a fucking article that goes out that's like, Firefly reunion on Netflix, and everyone shits their pants. And I'm like, how does no one fucking realize what's going on?
I would get it if it was April 1st.
And you know what's funny about that? I believe I started that years ago. Back in 2010, I posted that on April 1st. I posted a story, but at the end of that story, I absolutely said, in a perfect world, this would be true, but it's April 1st. Happy April Fool's Day. But people didn't read the whole article because I built it as a press release, and it got shared everywhere. It went to LA. It was on message boards. It was crazy, and it's some of the best hate mail I've ever gotten, by the way, which is still available online. It's really funny. But – I mean, I remember
like that one time Brian Kluger claimed he invented the question mark.
But I don't. Hey, that was like 8 years ago. I don't think people were really doing that back then. But
no one told jokes 8 years ago.
True.
Jokes are new.
But Dexter, yes, I remember reading it and I was like, okay. But then I saw the site. I'm like, oh yeah, this is not right. And unfortunately,
I just wanted to believe it. That's really what it comes down to. I wasn't too critical because I saw it and my heart just was like, yes, I'm ready.
So
John's still looking for a reason to buy that Henley.
So John had a good idea.
Yeah, I was thinking after my disappointment surrounding that whole fake press release, I decided, why don't we all come up with alternate endings for Dexter that we think would be better than the craptastic one that we got?
All right, so who goes first?
Jeremy, I'm interested to hear what Jeremy said, because as soon as we mentioned that we were doing this, Jeremy was like, I've already got one done. So I'd like to hear how he already had one and what it is.
All right.
I've had this conversation a million times with people that love that show but that just shit themselves whenever the finale comes up. So and the nice thing is with my ending, you can keep almost – everything that happens right up until the end of the show, pretty much keep it all the same. What was his sister's name?
Deborah.
So you can keep Deb dying, because to me that's a key thing that he blames. And what was his son's name?
Harrison.
All right. So Harrison had the whole born in blood experience with his mother. So he's already supposedly going to be fucked up. But my ending for the show was that after Dexter deals with Deb dying, he's at the point where he has realized that him being involved in anyone's life has brought just kind of ruin and destruction across the board. So his obsession with blood, he realizes that the last blood that he needs to spill and for his own retribution is to take his own life. So he does that. And then as he's dying, Harrison comes into the room and then finds his father dying. And so Dexter actually dies in Harrison's, like, basically, like, with Harrison right there witnessing the whole thing. And what that could eventually lead into is your spinoff series of Dexter, where you have Dexter's son. And then you still get, Michael C. Hall, but now Michael C. Hall is playing the dark passenger for his son. And that's the way I would have done it.
Nice. Not a bad idea.
I like that because I basically had the same thing, but a little different.
All right, let's hear your version, Kluger, since yours is close to that, apparently.
So, in the original ending, which everybody hated, it just basically showed Michael C. Hall, Dexter, as a log jammer, basically.
You're a log jammer.
A log jammer. So at the, before that, we saw Dexter on a boat in a storm, basically, but we all thought he died. But I think it'd be cool to show him that Dexter actually died in the storm. And nobody really knew who he was. You didn't know he was the serial killer. And then cut to 12 years later, his son now is probably 13 years old. His son's being picked on at school and bullied. He comes home and cries, and he sees his father's picture in his room. And that's in when in walks Dexter as, like, the ghost Dexter, the dark passenger, to teach him the code. And that's how the series ends. So kind of very, very similar to Jeremy, because I thought that would be kind of cool because, you know, it's very controversial, but I do think what Dexter did was good. Like, he took out the bad guys. So I like that aspect of it. And I'm curious to know yours, Atterbury, because the original showrunner and producer of the show who left after season four actually had an ending that, you know, of course they didn't do, but he talked about it. And I'm curious to see if yours goes along with that.
Well, I'm not sure if it'll go along with that, but what I would have liked to have seen is basically kind of a whole reworking of the final season. The final season, I think, was a very big letdown kind of throughout. The two big things that I would change about the final season is I would wipe out the character of Hannah completely. Like, she doesn't need to be in there. I feel like they got carried away with always having a love interest for Dexter and, you know, kind of a female for him to be bearing his soul to and all of that. So I think just remove that character entirely. It just kind of muddies the end of the film, and swap out the character of Saxon for a really much more menacing arch nemesis. I think there needs to be someone that's really more like the Moriarty to his Sherlock Holmes, a better villain for him to really go up against as the finale. And what I would really like to have seen is for Deb to have healed fine from her gun wound, you know, shot to the stomach, and for Dexter to actually be killed by the alternate Saxon, who's a better villain than the one we had, and for them to be squaring off. Oh, you know, kind of like what we got with Sherlock Holmes and Moriarty, where they're fighting, falling over a waterfall, that kind of idea, except for Dexter would die, but as that's happening, Deb would walk in and kill the villain too. So both Dexter and the villain essentially die at the same time. Deb ends up taking care of Harrison and being his parent. And then I would really I feel like what was missing is a wrapping up of all the other characters that were in the show. You know, you didn't really get anything more from Masuka or all the other characters that mattered so much and brought so much feeling to the show as a whole. So I think there should have been like a funeral for Dexter, where all of his friends and family came and celebrated him as being a good man. And we all got to see that. And then, of course, the news, like in the way he died and all of that, would be shown around that area. And all of the people that he saved throughout the various seasons, you could show them watching the show and saying, like, oh my God, that's the guy that saved my life, because he saved so many people. And you could see like their reactions to seeing him having announced as being dead. And I think that'd be a cool way to show the effect that his character had on these different people, too.
All right.
So, that's what I'd like to see. I think it'd be a more fitting end to the heroic aspect of his character.
Right. I agree. And, like, I just, you know, I think his son just had to be there. Like, his son has – him and his son and Dexter have to be – I don't know. I don't know why they did what they did in the show, but – his son and Dexter, I thought, should have been like the thing, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, let Deb raise him afterwards, and then, you know, it was the same kind of thing where you could even just move right along kind of with your guys' idea, which is to then at that point, you've got son of Dexter, and Michael C. Hall could still be what his father was to him.
Yeah, and the Deb thing works too, because you need someone to teach him how to not get caught.
Right.
But it works well to have Deb raise him because, you know, like, an imaginary kind of voice talking to you, it's, you know, it's really inside you, and he's not going to basically know to teach himself all the things.
Right.
Ways to avoid, you know, DNA and the plastic and all that shit.
Exactly. It would put her in that same situation of being like, man, I love this kid and I don't want, and I see that he's got problems. So she's in the same situation that his dad was in now, where he has to either be like, all right, this kid's either going to go to jail or I have to teach him how to do it the right way. So she's invested, and it's not just like he's going to some adopted family or whatever, or staying with
Hannah. That's good.
So do y'all know what the original showrunner had in mind for the season finale or series finale?
I have no idea. No.
So basically, I guess what he had was that the very last scene would be Dexter like waking up, and like the audience would think like, oh, this was all a dream. But it wasn't. Dexter was waking up and he was opening his eyes on a medical table in the Florida prison. He had been caught and he was about to be injected with the death serum. And then the people who are watching the death, you know, through the window are all of his big kills and all the people that died.
Interesting.
From him. So that's how that showrunner wanted it. And I was like, is that better than the one they showed? Which I think, yes, anything's better than one.
I don't know. I think that still sounds kind of weird. That's like this kind of a weird mixture of being supposedly real with him being about to be injected, but all the people watching are the people that he killed who were dead. So it's a little weird.
Well, I think it's probably, I would imagine, like just seeing his life flashes before his eyes.
But I would rather see the positive aspect of that. You know what I mean? Like we saw him kill all those people. What we haven't seen is the effects that his heroic efforts had afterwards, yeah. Which is why I would love to see people reacting to the news of his death.
Yeah. All right. Like I said, I enjoyed Dexter. The last couple of seasons weren't great. But unfortunately there will not be a season 9.
There might be. It's they've all said that who knows, basically.
Never say never.
It could happen, but it's not happening now.
All right. So our last one. We are gonna talk about theme parks, and what type of theme park do we want to see added to like something like Disney World or Disneyland? Like a real cool theme park. Could be movie related, TV related, whatever. But something that usually like really doesn't exist. And so I was like going to have all of us pitch our ideas for a new theme park, you know, that include rides and food and like sets and, you know, what you get to do there. So I'm curious. I actually wrote down three now, but I'm going to see if any of you came up with the same ones because I have backups. But let's go with Mr. Atterbury first. Pitch me your theme park idea.
Here's what I want to see. I want to see a permanent horror theme park. Because the big problem is that the only theme parks that we've ever experienced that are horror-based are always temporary. You know, we go to Universal Studios or Knott's Berry Farm or when they're doing their Halloween thing. And it's always just kind of these temporary mazes and stuff that go up that are not really that high quality because they're just meant to go up and stay up for a couple months and then they get taken down. I would like to see something with the quality level and the kind of permanent fixtures that Disneyland has, but a Victorian horror theme park specifically. So if you can think of a horror theme park that looks like what the environment in like Penny Dreadful. Okay. That's what I would like to see. But specifically, it needs to be indoors, whether it's all underground or all in just a gigantic building. It needs to be indoors so they can actually have climate control and sunlight control and all that kind of stuff. Because when I think of going to like the Harry Potter land for existence, it doesn't work for my brain because I don't want to go to Southern California when it's 105 degrees out and be trying to go to Honeydukes and getting, you know, and thinking, oh, I'm in frozen cold Harry Potter land. It just doesn't work for me. So I think it needs to
sweating your balls off in your wizard.
Yeah,
robe.
Like sitting there in shorts and a tank top with sweaty people surrounding you that just stink like sunscreen. It's just not conducive to that Harry Potter mindset. So they really need to be able to have it in fully indoors so they can have things like fog and it can be kind of this permanent kind of darkness where it almost feels like it's always dusk. And I would really like to see that.
So what you want is that inside a Truman Show dome.
Exactly. Same idea. So, and you know, it very much like what we've got with the Haunted Mansion at Disneyland, but just a whole theme park like that.
So when you say, what was the Showtime TV show?
Penny Dreadful.
So do you want like actual characters? Do you want those like universal type of monsters in there? Or is it just like anything goes? Like,
no, I would love. Now, it doesn't have to be specifically locked into the universal monsters. I would just like to see a lot of those same characters. Like, for instance, we could have a Dracula's Castle dark ride, you know, okay. where you're going through the entirety of that. And, you know, even like Castlevania kind of experience where there's all the different levels to it. And something for Frankenstein and the Phantom of the Opera would be awesome. You could have a Wolfman like walkthrough maze. Where it's like all these different places. You're walking through the manor, you're walking through the garden, you're walking through the swampy woods outside that's all creepy, and you've got the werewolf, you know, pursuing you throughout this thing. And they could have a really great, terrifying animatronic werewolf that comes out. But if it had that level of quality that something like Disneyland has, I think it would be really cool. And, you know, roller coasters, you could have a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, like, roller coaster going along the tops, like, rooftops of London as he jumps from building to building, all kinds of stuff like that. And I think it'd be really cool if you had actors in character walking around as various types that you might have seen in Victorian London, like beggars and, you know, criminals and cops and things like that. It'd be really cool.
That sounds fun.
And you know, you got to have authentic food from the time also. So things like, you know, English pudding and roasted meats and, you know, all the kind of things that you would have seen in like a Charles Dickens novel. I'd love to see that. And for Christmas time, they could make it, you know, Victorian horror Christmas where they've got, you know, aspects of even like a Christmas Carol going on because there are scary parts to that novel in the movies. And you could have Krampus and all kinds of stuff like that. It'd be really fun. I'd love to see something like that, just as long as it's got the high level of quality that you would see in something like Disneyland, because all the horror theme park stuff we get now is always crappy and cheap.
Okay. All right. I like it. I like it.
I would love it. That'd be so much fun for me.
That would be so much fun. That sounds like Josie and Jeremy's worst nightmare.
No, Josie would enjoy it. I really wouldn't care one way or another. I would have fun. Like, I dig the Wolfman ride. You know, like the idea, like, where if, you know, you're you got a couple people in the car and the whole thing is you're just going around the thing and the Wolfman's popping out. I think that sounds fun as shit.
Yeah, fun. Absolutely. And you could also have like a good authentic British pub. You know, for a restaurant or something like that.
And the reason why John's idea appeals to me is because, like, most of, like, modern horror I don't care for, but classic monster stuff I love, you know. So John's Park actually super appeals to me.
Cool.
All right.
Cool, cool, cool. All right, Jeremy, pitch me your theme parks. Sons. All right.
Well, when you mentioned Disney, I thought we were specifically doing – a park that we would like to have in Disneyland. So that is the route that I went. Now, the cool thing about Disney parks is when you are inside them, you are basically, you see nothing of the outside world. So the idea is that when you're walking around in things, the immersion is 100%. And so what I would like them to make is I would like them to make a Cloud City theme park. And what you can have is you can still have walled in and be on the ground. But when you're walking around and you see a wall next to you, it can just be a projected, like, outdoor window. Now, you can also change those screens, right, those projections to match whatever time of day it is. So if it's night outside, it can look like it's night outside this window. So you're totally immersed. Whenever you're walking around indoors, you can do the same thing. You can, you know, put up the walls that project the outside. And, you know, there's even stuff, you know, where they have like the 4D movies and shit like that, where, you know, when there's gunfire, they pump in the smell of things. You know, when you're in enclosed areas, they can, you know, pump in a little like some kind of like outdoor smell to make it, you know, the vibe that you're in there. Now, for the main big ride that you would have in this area, the idea is that you are on Cloud City, and the ride would be whenever Lando has announced that the Empire has taken control of Cloud City, and he advises everyone to leave immediately. And so what it can be is while you're ride through, like kind of how when you're on Indiana Jones and you're going through the ride and you're seeing different characters, it can be from that point on, you know, you see Luke land. You know, as you're getting away, you know, you see Han frozen in carbonite. You know, you shoot around through there. You'll see multiple, like, little lightsaber fights between Vader and Luke and all that stuff. And that would basically be – the ride would be the escape from Cloud City after the Empire arrives.
That'd be super cool. So I know Star Wars is doing like a theme park. I don't know if they're doing a Cloud City type thing there.
Not as far as they've announced.
No, like the one they're putting in Disneyland, I forget the name of the world or city they're building, but it kind of seems to be this thing that's unique specifically to Disneyland. Like they're building a basically new Star Wars planet in Disneyland.
Okay.
And there's going to be a hotel that's coming to Disney World and another Star Wars park, but the Star Wars hotel will actually be kind of close to what we're talking about in terms of, like, everything that you look at looks like it's from Star Wars. But I don't know anything about the park that's going in Disney World.
Cool. All right.
What would they eat at the Cloud City theme park? All cotton candy?
There would be lots of cotton candy. But then you could opt to have the Darth Vader surprise party spread.
Barbecued Ugnaughts.
Yeah, basically.
I like that. I'd definitely
Carbonite candy bars.
Mm-hmm. You know, you got a section that you can walk through that's like the Carbonite freezing chamber.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You can basically have your picture taken. You know, you just like do the pose, and then they fucking take the picture, and then it just fucking overlays it, and you're like, you know, all that shit.
Well, so you know how, like, at some ice cream places now, they have that, like, deep freezing where they pour the nitrous oxide or whatever it is on it, and it, like, it instantly freezes your ice cream?
Yes.
They could have something like that set up to look like a Carbonite freezing chamber and then just let you pick your ingredients and, like, Carbonite freeze it, and there you go.
That would be awesome. I also, though, the other thing I thought would be really cool is if you could get, like, the picture thing, you know, where it's, like, of the thing, and then they have a 3D printer, right? And then actually, like, 3D prints your face in Carbonite.
Ah, that sounds great. I love it.
That would be super cool merchandising right there. That would make a ton of fucking money.
All right, Kluger, what have you got for us?
All right. So my theme park is called Salo or 365 Days of Sodom. It is just torture, poop, and sex every day. That is my... No, I'm just kidding.
Is this all ages?
All ages. No, especially all ages. There are voyeur booths. Oh, yeah, it's good.
Oh, my God.
What's in the voyeur booths?
Oh, people can watch all of this happening just by watching all this degradation happen, this debauchery. I like it. No, that's actually not what it is. I just want to say thank you to a certain man for that. So happy. All right, so I had two that I put down for real. And I'm surprised none of y'all got in on this, but I don't know which one to say. Well,
why don't you start with one and then
the good one,
then do the other one.
All right. Well, I'm going to go Game of Thrones. I'm going to do a Game of Thrones huge, gigantic theme park where, like, Atterbury's is going to be kind of like a dome type of thing because there's going to be the cold of the north and the very dry desert-like areas of Westeros as well, as long as like a water type of place where you would be able to go and explore and see like in-character actors. But there will be a couple of very big, very tall roller coaster rides in the form of like a dragon where you would be able to basically ride a dragon all over the place. All of the sets you can build, there's going to be eateries like with long wooden tables that you would be able to have like these big roast things.
Like medieval times.
Yes, but
watch people jousting and shit.
Yeah, and this is more like an adult type of thing because I don't think kids would really get this.
Medieval times with naked people.
No, not naked people. I won't have naked people really in there.
Well, it's not going to be Game of Thrones then.
There will be like sets.
He's got a point there.
There will be huge sets built, interactive games that people can play, like learn.
There'll be huge sex built?
Huh? Sets.
Sex built?
Sex. It's sex built. Tons of food and wine, and people can actually get married there with a stipulation of having a red wedding where people can storm in and fake, you know, murder people and get...
Stab them all to death.
Yes. I thought that would be super fun because I would love to go to that Game of Thrones theme park and like see big giants walking around and like take a place in like a battle for the wall or for Westeros. I think that would be super fun.
It sounds awesome to me. I would go.
Some Game of Thrones LARPing. That's what you want?
Yes. Very much so. With like no a Renaissance brothel. Fair of sorts.
Game of Thrones LARPing with no whorehouse.
My other one.
So just normal LARPing.
my other one is, besides Game of Thrones, we're going to go on the other spectrum of that to the future. What's so funny about this? LARPing? LARPing's awesome. What are you talking about? Why are y'all saying
shit? We know we're just making fun of your idea.
All right. My other idea is a huge Star Trek theme park where they will actually have an actual life-size USS Enterprise that you could board and walk around on.
Weren't they building life-size? This in Vegas?
Were they?
Yeah. There's... So I don't know if they're still doing it, but there was a while where somebody wanted to actually build a full-size Enterprise in Vegas, and basically it would have been a hotel.
What? No, I don't want this a hotel. I just want it to, like, look like the ship and, like, be like what the ship looks like inside.
I know, but there's living quarters inside the fucking Enterprise, that's where people would stay.
Interesting.
It sounds cool, but can you imagine the kind of people that would be there?
Same people as the Star Wars people would be there.
Star Wars theme park is at Disneyland. If it was its own Star Wars theme park, that's different. And if this was a totally Star Trek theme park, that'd be a rough crowd, man.
Why would that be a rough crowd?
You know why?
No,
it's a bunch of Trekkies. That's why.
Trek. What's wrong with Trekkies, man? I don't know. A life-size Enterprise. I didn't know they were doing that. If they're doing that, I'm all in. Because I think there would be roller coasters. There would be augmented reality things. I think there'd be the actual sets that people can, like, actually act out, you know, fighting the enemies or, like, being on different planets.
So what you're saying is that you either want a space role play or medieval role play.
Yes. How much? That's what's all going to an interactive.
We can make that happen. That already exists.
Those are my two. Game of Thrones, Star Trek, and of course, Salo.
We can get you a red jumpsuit, man.
I mean,
at least he didn't suggest a Doctor Who theme park.
Oh, Christ.
No.
He's thinking about it. No. He's considering it.
I like Doctor Who, but no Doctor Who.
I'd take the Trek theme park over the Who theme park.
No, a lot.
In all seriousness, though, I do think that Trek theme park would be a lot of fun. I just have to poke at the Trekkies when I can.
Especially, dude, can you imagine if they actually built an actual size USS Enterprise?
That would be humongous and pretty mind-blowing.
Oh, no, I'd definitely be in for that. And, like, all the futuristic food they would eat. I wonder if how they would do the beaming up thing. Like, I have no idea how they would do that, but I would think that would
be an elevator.
Just a little catapult that you stand on. Just launch you into a wall at high speed.
With wires.
I think that would be super fun. But yes, those are our two fun topics today. Anything else to add before we close out the show?
No, I feel like there was a bunch of stuff. Oh, I just finished season one of the Frankenstein Chronicles.
I was just about to mention that.
Yep. I just finished season one, and it was a total surprise ending. I didn't expect any of that.
Fucking amazing. I was trying so hard not to be like, you've got to watch this. Because I was like, I was telling Jones, I'm trying to get him to watch it. I was like, but if I lean on him too hard, he's going to know some shit's going to go down. And I just want him to watch it. And then crap himself.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. It's a fantastic finale to season one that I did not expect coming. And so I'm looking forward to watching the next season. Oh,
season two is so good. Like, it's like season one, they like intentionally slow burn you. And then you get to season one and you're like, okay, well, you know, it's over. And then it's like, then you realize, oh, wait, I have like one whole more episode. And that's when the whole, like the serious shit goes down. It's like, and then season two is like the, like, just like the payoff even on top of that.
Nice. Have you watched any of this yet, Brian?
No, I don't even know what the Frankenstein Chronicles is.
So it's a Victorian era murder mystery show starring Sean Bean, and it's on Netflix.
All right.
And it's great. It's fantastic. I only watched it because it had the word Frankenstein in it, and so that got my attention. And I watched it, and I've been very pleasantly surprised. I'm just amazed that it completely flew under the radar until it just showed up on Netflix all of a sudden.
Yeah, it like popped up on Netflix, and I was like, oh, I'll give this a try.
Yeah. I mean, I was at first when I saw it, I was like, oh, this is probably going to be awful because everything that they put out with the horror movie name sounds terrible, like the Van Helsing show. That was just horrible and other things like that. But this was actually a very good show. It reminds me of the quality of Luther or something like that.
Wow. Luther's a good show too.
And there's two seasons on there and each one is 6 episodes.
All right. And so some holy shit moments come out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised with the twist.
All right. All right. Well, I'll have to give that a shot here shortly. But yes, thank you for joining us. We are Mediocrity Podcast, where the show is just slightly okay. But we still hope you enjoy Jonathan Atterbury, Jeremy Maggart, Jeremy Atterbury, Jonathan Maggart. I don't know. They're wonderful human beings. And I'm Brian Kluger. We're on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. We'll be back next week with some awesome and fun things to tickle your fancy. But we love you. As always.